Hello and welcome to this week's You May or May Not Like It. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. And I am here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at PureRockFury. You can find our Facebook at Facebook.com/ReviewAndRoast. And you can find us on Instagram at Instagram.com/ReviewAndRoast. If you're into any kind of Star Wars gaming, you can also find us on Instagram at Instagram.com/StarWarsTabletop. You can find all of our written reviews at ReviewAndRoast.com, and you can listen to all of our podcasts at ComicRoast.com. Today, we're here to talk to you about New York 1901. This was 2015. I feel like I came out before that. That's kind of weird.
No, it's pretty new-ish. In Review and Roast time, in Dice Tower time, this game is like the oldest.
I don't know what that means.
It means they get way better games to right now.
Well, we get them because we have to pay for them. We're not cool.
This is true.
We can't destroy local board game stores like they can.
Wow.
Oh, did you not see that today?
Oh, no. I saw the video. I saw that commentary on Board Game Breakfast when he first posted it, the day he actually posted that episode, because I was like, oh, this isn't going to go over well.
Yeah.
And then the next week, he's like, I'm really sorry. Whatever.
You know, I didn't
watch.
Dude
puts out 50 million videos a week.
I didn't watch his rant. I just kind of read excerpts from it, and it sounds pretty accurate to a lot of places I've been to.
What places are you going to?
Or every time I walk into any store that sells games, 90% of the people in there are magic, and they're not the friendliest people.
What game store are you going to?
You just were talking about it when we were down here at the GOAT. And, oh, are you guys playing Monopoly? You said yourself you wanted to put your fist down the guy's throat because he was being a... Now all of a sudden I'm the asshole because I'm like, yeah, I've experienced those same things.
That was one time.
Did we also forget about when Jeff went to the Gaming GOAT in Joliet and they literally had no games and it was all magic and the guy was like, yeah, we don't do any. Poor games suck.
Yeah, I didn't go to that store though.
I'm just saying. What he's saying is not completely unheard of. You know, there's a right way and a wrong way, and they didn't close all the goats around here to reopen them later if they were being run properly in the first place. So 2015, we have New York 1901, won the 2016 Mensa Select Award, and totally going to butcher this, but the 2015 Vauden Pelly Strategy Game of the Year winner. No correction?
I don't know what the hell that is.
I don't know. Strategy Game of the Year winner for 2015, for whatever that is. Basically, you have 2 to 4 players. You get a board of, you know, a section of New York. With some streets and plots of land. And each character gets little worker guys, and then you draw cards to... I'm sorry, I take that back. You get your worker guys, and you get a bunch of different buildings. You get Bronze Age buildings, Silver Age buildings, and then Golden Age buildings. And you obviously have to start with the Bronze Age, and then as you score points, you go around the track, and when you hit a certain point, then you can start building Silver Age. And then when you get around even more, you get to gold, and you know you can start building the Golden Age. And basically, it's almost like they're almost shaped like Tetris pieces. And as you collect these cards, there's a not a community. Help me out here.
Community.
The cards where everybody picks a card from.
Are you talking about the land cards?
Yeah. You don't every not. It's not like you start with a hand of cards.
Oh, there's just a draw deck.
Yeah, but there's five. It's kind of like Ticket to Ride. There's 5 cards out in front of you, and you can either pick one of those. And I don't think you can pick off the top of the deck. No,
there's one.
There's one.
You get 3 like player power cards, which everybody gets the same one. There's one where you can clear the market and reset it and take one of the cards. But I think that's the only thing. Other than that, you're pretty much beholden to what's out there. I think due to 5 cards, I can't remember, 3 or 4. I think it's like 1 per player plus 1 or something like that.
Either way, and every turn you draw a card, and each card has a shape, because each plot of land is either 2 spaces or...
3.
No, well, the standard's 2. The big ones are 3.
Right.
Right, okay. And what you do is you take the card, and then you claim that plot of land by either placing a worker on it for use later, or you place one of your buildings on it. And as you place the buildings, you know, you score points based on the point value of that building. Now, before the game starts, there's a handful of end game scoring cards that will come out. And I believe there's three that come out every game. So, you know, they're never they shouldn't be the same ever. And that'll basically say, you know, whoever has the most buildings built along Broadway, whoever has the most this, who, you know, different little scenarios around the game that'll help boost your points. So it gives you something to work towards besides just building buildings. And outside of your own buildings, there are four landmark skyscrapers in the game as well. So as you acquire more and more land, you have the opportunity to build one of these special skyscrapers, which are obviously worth more points than anything you have. And they take up a lot more space, so you have to make sure you have enough plots of land to build it. And you can always knock down your old buildings, but you can never knock down a newer building and put up an older building in its place. So if you have a silver building and you want to, for some reason, put a bronze building back up, you cannot take down the silver to put up a bronze. You always have to build up. So that's kind of a neat little thing. But, you know, once you take a building off the board, though, it's out of the game. So it's not like you take it out of here and then you can build it over on this area later on in the game. Doesn't work that way. So, and you basically just go around taking turns. And then
First one to be down to their final two buildings.
Is it two buildings? That will trigger the final round of the game, and then you know you do your scoring. It's not super complicated. Like I said, think of like a Ticket to Ride, except you're building buildings instead of train routes. And I don't believe anybody. You know, there's no like in Ticket to Ride where you have like, you know, everyone's got their own routes. Like you don't get like a secret objective in the three objectives that come out, and whoever has them basically is all it is.
True that.
Yep. So, anywho, what did you like about
the game? What do I like about the game? Components are nice. Board artwork is nice. Again, it's an easy game to teach. A strategy game of the year confounds me. I don't know how that got there. It's a good family game. I mean, it's a good family game with a decent amount of strategy in that you're fighting over territory, but...
It was nominated for best family game.
See, I would have picked that as a family game over a strategy game any day. Because to me, a strategy game requires that there be multiple paths to victory, and this game kind of doesn't have that. There's only so much space to occupy, especially considering part of the game is owning the most properties along a couple of chosen streets at the beginning of the game. So it'll be like, oh, Wall Street, you want to have the most buildings, and of course, you're qualifying that by buildings on both sides of the street, which can be tricky with building placement, but because buildings are what they are, placement can be a little wonky at times, especially because some plots of land literally are only two squares wide. If you have a building that's three squares wide, you can't place there.
Well, you gotta wait.
No, I'm saying if the building is like say 3x3 and the plot of land that you want is 2x4, you just can't use it. And there's the thing to compare it to Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride, unless you fully get blocked from a city, which can happen in a 5-player game, there's almost always a workaround. Where in this game, there's not as many workarounds, and that can get super annoying. And because the colors are what they are, there's no... Like, Ticket to Ride has a lot of routes that are... This is a pink route. This is a pink and or green route. This is a 4-square black route. But there's a lot of neutral routes that you can... Again, there's a lot of workaround with Ticket to Ride, which is why it's a really simple-looking game, and it's a simple game to teach. But there's a high level of strategy in that game for a game that's that easy. I'm not saying that Ticket to Ride is Scythe or, you know, one of these really deep, complex games. But for what it is, it offers a lot of tactical decision-making, whereas New York 1901 sometimes is like, well, I wanted to place this 3x3 building because it's worth 8 points, but I can't do it because there's nowhere to put it. Wah, wah.
Yeah.
That's the part about this game that is like, everything is fixed, which is sort of annoying. I mean, like, again, I'm not downing the game. It's a good game, but strategy game of the year... That makes me almost want to give it a lower score than I gave it on the website, which isn't fair. I won't do that. But I'm just like, strategy game of the year? Are you kidding me? This is a good, we're wrapping the night up, let's bust out 1901. It's not like I'm dogging a game. I'm supposed to be talking about what I like. I like the components. I like the Tetris-y aspect of the game. I like competing for the majorities along the streets. It has a Ticket to Ride adjacency to it. I hate to keep comparing it to Ticket to Ride. I love Ticket to Ride, though. I'm, like, super still in love with that game. So Ticket to Ride is one of those games that I feel like there's a reason why it's as popular as it is, because it's almost endlessly replayable as they keep... All they have to do is keep putting out new maps. And in fact, they could put out a new United States map and really go to town with a really, like, kind of almost overstuffed map where they start adding cities that are just to the point of being ridiculous.
You know what else they could do is every round add an event deck. Like, oh, there's a fire in Chicago, lose this route or like that. Or, you know, there's an earthquake here in this tunnel.
Yeah.
You'd have to add more routes and a little more workarounds maybe, but
that
could be interesting.
If I'm not mistaken, those routes are based on the map in 1920 or 1910 or something. If they made a modern-day map, you could make one for every state in the Union. You could do Chicago to Kankakee and Kankakee to Peoria and Peoria to Springfield and Springfield to Chicago. You could do one for every state in the Union. And if you did a full country, you could do like a giant double-sized map, like crazy routes, like Chicago to Des Moines and, you know, stop-offs in the Quad Cities and go completely ballistic with this. Ticket to Ride has a ton of variability. New York 1901 is a fixed game. It's a good game. A fixed game.
Right.
So, yeah, that should be all the stuff I don't like. The stuff I do like, I like the little building pieces. The design of the board is very... It makes a lot of logical sense. The numbers go from 0 to 100. the components are nice. Again, it's a good gateway game. It's a good... I'm going to sit down and I'm going to show my mom how to play a board game that's not Monopoly. A game that requires some thought. A game that doesn't rely on complete and total luck.
Yeah.
In a way, you want to be the first person to put all your buildings out, and at the same time, you don't, because you don't want to just throw out all your crappy buildings just to end the game. You want to kind of maneuver the game in such a way where you can put out your awesome buildings and be the guy who goes, woo, look at me.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you throw all your buildings out to where you have two left, but you take a bunch out of the game, that's a lot less buildings for end game scoring. And end game scoring comes into play pretty big in this game, I feel like. You know, it's always everyone, because every time everyone's placing a building, and all the buildings range anywhere from like 2 to 4 points. I mean, there's nothing major. You know what I mean? But then when you build one of the special skyscrapers, those are worth anywhere from, what, like 12 to 18 points, depending on the size of it. Something like that. Don't quote me on these numbers. But at the end of the game, you know, whoever has the most buildings along Broadway. Well, if you had 3 bronze, but you took them down to put up 1 silver, you know what I mean? You're going to get screwed on it, and that's 10 points, and that's 10. You know what I mean? And if you save your 3 special cards, that's another couple of points at the end. But I feel like it's a pretty even scoring game until you get to the final round, until you get to the end game scoring, and that's where things can really change. So yeah, you can plow through and just throw all your buildings out willy-nilly and, you know, take down all your old ones, but it's not super beneficial when it comes to the end game scoring. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I like the fact that you can teach this game to an 8-year-old and not super difficult to understand how it works. I mean, you play a green card in a green spot. You play a blue card in a blue spot. Really not much else to it beyond that. I mean, I guess the strategy comes in, like, if you see somebody going for one big plot of land in, like, this middle spot where it's like, man, if they get all these spots, they could potentially own 9 squares and go huge with this. I don't want that, so I'm going to block them. You can be a dick that way, but at the same time, in a way, there's almost no strategy to that play style, because you can block somebody and not really get anything beneficial for yourself. Like say if there's a block of like 3x4, and this guy's got the 3 and the 2 up here, and somebody else has the 2 and the 2 and this 2, and now there's like a 3 here. I mean, there are ways to screw people, but sometimes I feel like it almost hurts you to waste space doing so. I don't know. Plus, at the end of the game, when all the good spots are claimed, you're literally just playing out the string, which kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, with it being a fixed board, it is kind of, I don't want to say boring, but it definitely limits the options for a new experience, I guess, every time you play. So I guess we can swing that right into what we didn't like about it. Personally, there's really not much I don't like about it, but, you know, having, like you said, the fixed board kind of, it doesn't leave it doesn't leave a lot of room for surprises, which I kind of like in a lot of...
Yeah, the thing about, like I remember the first time I taught my 8-year-old nephew how to play Ticket to Ride. Actually, Scott was there. We were both teaching both of our nephews how to play Ticket to Ride. And my 8-year-old nephew was on my team, and we were losing. And it was still, like, probably 3/4 of the way through the game. And he's like, oh, we're losing. I go, settle down. I go, you're about to see what makes this game amazing in about 10 minutes. So we played out all of our trains, etc. Then comes end game scoring, where you have all your secret routes, and then you throw in the addition of longest route. That's where you can lap somebody. That is why that game keeps you in the game the whole time, because you could be at 40, this guy could be at 55, but his routes may only be worth 9, 7, and 11. Your routes may be worth 20, 18, and 13. You complete all those routes. Now you go from 40. All of a sudden, you're at like 97, and the person that you were playing against only has 91. Well, lo and behold, there was a reason why you stuck it out.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the one thing I do like about a lot of those types of games is until you go through with the final scoring, it's anybody's game.
Yeah, and then again, when you add in another map, like the Europe map, now you're adding in tunnels, now you're adding in the wilds, you're adding in the spaces with the little train symbol on where you have to, like, draw 3 cards to see if you can take that.
Well, those are where you have to use wilds.
Oh, okay.
The tunnels were the ones with the black edges. Oh,
the
ones with
the black borders.
But it also throws in the train station. Use somebody else's route, to which I don't believe the... So, yeah, 1901. it is hard because it is... They are very similar games.
It's a hard game where if somebody has 80 points and you have 45, it's a hard game to get excited about end game scoring because probably you're not going to have enough modifiers to cover the spread.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, well, I have 45 and I'm looking at the board here and I maybe will get up 10 bonus points there and 5 there. That's going to bring me up to 60 and he's still got 25 more than I do before he scores his bonuses. So, it's just you're too landlocked, and there's no wilds, there's no variability. There's no cards or abilities that let you place a red on a blue spot because you have this ability. The game really needs individual player powers or something to open the gameplay up a little bit.
You know what, though? And I think the reason that they won't ever be able to do that is because every single space on the board has a card. There's no extra cards. There's no extra spaces. So every spot on that board is spoken for with the card that's in the deck. So once you run through the deck, the game is pretty much over because, you know what I mean? Like, there's one card for each space on the board.
Yeah.
And that's it. So it's kind of hard to then throw the monkey wrench in there of, well, here's a wild, so you can place that pink onto a green. Well, now that green card is just useless, and you almost have to take it out of the game. So, you know what I mean? So it's kind of hard to do something like that with the current setup. Now, if you made a different board and you had maybe wild spaces on the board or something, I don't know. I wouldn't even begin to know how to do something like that, but I guess that'll lead us into things we would do differently is... I think a game like this, especially a game like this, I know, like, Ticket to Ride has, you know, a gajillion different maps. But a game like this, I think right out of the box, should have a double-sided board.
That? You're playing on a one square mile of New York. So you really have a limited amount of space.
It's like a square half mile, if you really think.
Something like that. It's not much. It's
very small.
There's like all of about 8 square blocks, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. It's not a lot of space. And there should be something in there to... I mean, I don't know if they were going for any semblance of historical accuracy with, like, oh, the buildings were just right on top of each other. There were no alleys. There were no walkways. There were no parks. There were no nothing. There should be something. I feel like maybe if they had just done, just say, the island of Manhattan as a map and then have it to where you can place buildings, but you can also place parks. You can place alleys. You could place, I think, a bigger map with more options would have made it a much more compelling game. Maybe if you can even put, like, things out on the water. I don't know. I feel like the game is too small to be something that I personally would like. I like to play the game after I've not played it for a while. Whereas I think if I played the game on a regular basis, I'd get bored of it a while. And I hate, because it's a good game, but it needs to open itself. It needed to be opened up more. in order to have long-term viability. And I think that might be why you don't hear much about the game right now, because I think there was a lot of buzz about it at first, but I feel like it's died off. And I feel like no expansions coupled with the fact that the game really doesn't have a lot of space to work with hurt it in the long run. And the thing, the fact that it has like no space to work with, like what really couldn't you do with an expansion? Build a Starbucks inside your 1901.
Never know.
I sound like I'm bagging on the game, and it's not really that. I mean, it's one of those games, if you play it once a year, you're like, oh, I like this game. It's fun. It's easy. I could teach it to my night. I could teach my grandma how to play. I could teach my aunt how to play. It's a good family holiday game, but it's not going to have enough to survive someone's collection in a long-term setting. And I think they should have...
I'm surprised you're dogging so much.
I don't mean to be. I know I've been doing that. I just feel like a bigger space to work with. Like, if they would have made the board the size of, like, Game of Thrones, where it was, like, 6 or 8 squares, like, 2 by 4, like, really stretch that thing out and do the entire island of Manhattan in a grid to where the grid's basically blank and you can just fill it up with different types of buildings that would score you more points depending on placement. Maybe if they like section the map off, or maybe if you drew cards that said, okay, this game squares A1 through C4 is the red light district, and this is the business district, and this
is
the residential.
So they did some kind of zoning.
Yeah, but the zoning was random, so every game you would play, like you'd have a little board, and you would just kind of go, okay, the red light district in this game is, boom, these squares. And then, boom, these squares are the business district. This is the residential district. This is the neutral district, meaning if anything goes, then you would score your points depending on, okay.
Well, everybody would then have objective cards. Like, yeah. Hey, have most control in the red light district.
Yeah, or something. Like, if you could put, maybe not just buildings, but different types of...
And then you can bribe the city planners to put, like, a... skyscraper in the residential area and get bonus points.
Yeah, just be like, oh, I'm Donald Trump. I'm going to put a fucking giant condo skyscraper in the middle of this residential neighborhood, and I'm going to jack up the rents and blah, blah, blah. And then you could be like the scumbag.
He's our president. He shows some respect for old Donnie.
I'm talking about a board game version of
it. Here's the thing. I feel like we took the nice, simple, streamlined 1901 and turned it into this... ridiculously, I mean, we've done everything but say we want 3D skyscraper. We've completely changed the game. Not that that's bad, but we're just giving away all of our ideas for free now. I feel like this would have been our thing. We could have made Chicago. Chicago, bang, bang.
No, I just, yeah, that would be neat. If you randomly picked a role, like you're the slumlord, you're the Wall Street investor, you're the construction magnate, you're the Porno King or something weird like that.
The Porno King.
Yeah, wow. Like I'm going to put a bunch of strip clubs in this...
Porno Gill.
In this rich part of town and drive down the rents, but I'm also going to keep the business class all topped up on naked...
That's why there's got to be female prostitutes.
They don't have kind of prostitutes. I don't want to be that guy who's like, oh, yeah, human trafficking.
Yeah, dongs. Let's do it.
Whatever, I'm just, you know, do what you want.
All right, we're getting way off track here. I think it's time to wrap this deal up.
I will not be tagging the company in this podcast because I've really bagged on talking.
I am super shocked because every time it comes up to play it, you're like, right.
I do like the game.
No, not go back and listen to what the fuck you just said, son.
Yeah, I know.
Because it doesn't sound like it. So, number-wise, I was going to give it like a 7.5. You know, it's not like something that's super deep and super heavy, but it's a great, like, we got an hour to kill. This is a kind of, it's a pretty fun game. You know what I mean? It can be frustrating when you know, you just need that one green card and then it comes out and then the guy before you takes it. So you're like, damn it. You know what I mean? Like, it can be frustrating. There are some definite, like, screw your neighbor moments, but it's still a super fun game for what it is. I think I
got down on it because of the Mensa Award and the Strategy Game of the Year Award. Because before we went in this podcast, I'm sitting there going, it's a good light. Really light game, like in the vein of like Ticket to Ride with fewer options, or maybe Sushi Go with more options. And now I'm like, Strategy Game of the Year. Did these people not play like Euphoria or Scythe or something? I don't know what 2015 brought us, but I know 2016 brought us like Terraforming Mars and Scythe. And to me, those are strategy games. Those are deep thinking person strategy games that require a lot of planning, a lot of hoping that no one else is planning what you're planning. To me, 1901 is like, oh, I missed that spot. Well, I guess I'll take that one instead. It's just, I don't know.
Ticket to Ride's got a lot of awards or nominations.
It's also got a maps and a lot of, it's a thing. It's like a cultural phenomenon.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying.
All right, so I should get to my score. I gave it a 7.5 on the website, and as a game, being what it is, strip away all the strategy game of the year, the Mensa Select Awards, all of the accolades that seem can kind of be misplaced considering the fact that you have heard nothing about this game since it came out in terms of expansions or organized play events. There's not a lot of buzz around it. It's kind of fallen off the map. I don't even think I've seen it at the game stores for sale anymore. I don't think anyone's got it, which tells me that it's really not a thing. It didn't catch on. Or it caught on for a minute, and it's kind of gone, eh. So I'll stick with a 7.5 based merely on what it is. A good introductory game for non-gamers to maybe become interested in other games that will tickle their brainstem a little bit more. Like if you find somebody that's never really played a board game beyond Scattergories, and you want to introduce them to this kind of game, but you don't want to freak them out by going, let's go all the way and play, you know, some crazy worker placement game. You start them off real easy. You start them off with this. If you're like, a Ticket to Ride might blow their brains out, which I don't think that would ever happen, but if for some reason you might want to take a step even back further and start with this.
You were going to say a step even backer. You were. I can see it in your face. Well, whatever. There you have it. All around 7.5. It's a fun game. Don't let Brian's ramblings discourage you from trying it out. It is a fun. So that is New York 1901.
Buy with caution though, because I think
That is kind of a lot for a game that.
If this game was $30, I'd give it
a the replayability. It's not something you're going to put on the table, but it's definitely something you're going to whip out a couple times a year. I know we do. So
literally, one time you put it out, you know, we're like nuts.
No, because Jeff likes it.
No.
Anywho. So that's New York 1901. I am Scott. You can find me at XHorseNX. Brian, you can find at Pure Rock Fury. You can find everything else at Twitter/Review and Roast or Facebook.com/Review and Roast or Instagram.com/Review and Roast or Instagram.com/RoundRockTableTop or Instagram.com/1177. I mean, Christ, people. I think you know where to find us at this point. Well, because you're probably following us. So there you have it. That's everything. Go to reviewandroast.com, you can buy movie tickets, and go to comicroast.com, and you can listen to us talk about how much those movies all suck. So there you go. Have a good week.